show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. Dominic, I'm calling this one a mail-it-in Monday edition. No, I tease. We never mail it in. It'll be quite magical. I feel confident. How are you, buddy?
I'm awesome, Crudy. Great to see you, Evan, working the board for our audience. Happy belated Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Great to be with everyone.
Mother's Day Monday edition. Maybe we'll call it that.
Yeah, there you go.
Moms deserve more than one day. Certainly yes, my wife. Do. I took my mother-in-law and fam out for dinner last night. That was quite nice. Enjoyed both their company. All the mamas.
Excellent.
That's it. I like my mom.
I get you, man. I'm lucky
departed.
As well.
I borrow moms.
Yes. I love my mother-in-law. Man, she lives like seven houses down, and I know like a lot of folks be like, oh, you live so close to your mother-in-law, but my mother-in-law is cool.
Your mother-in-law is cool.
Right. Yeah, I got to see her as well, and I got to visit my own mother as well, my family. Yeah, it was a great, great weekend, man.
It was. So, again, happy Mother's Day Monday to all the mamas out there and all of those of us that love our moms and other people's moms, especially your wife's mom, because she is the coolest. Dom, we love John Nichols. He's going to join us a little bit later in the hour, about 4:30, to talk some Badger politics and perhaps take up the Middle East peace process. Maybe we'll find Middle East peace during this live show.
I thought Jared Kushner fixed all that already, right? I mean, hell, he got paid like $2 billion. That's a hell of a job, Brownie.
It was part of his portfolio.
Yeah.
And Tom, I got a hell of a story from Saturday night, but I'm going to save that till a little bit later. Let's start today's big program with the unbeatable Tammy Baldwin. Will she ever have a Republican opponent? You know, people were lining up to run against Ron Johnson. Nobody wants to get handed their ass by Tammy Baldwin, at least not yet. Do you think we'll ever get there, Dom?
Oh, absolutely.
Who do you think it will be? Or will it be multiple people?
It will be a primary. I think there'll be multiple people.
Well, let's talk about Toxic Tom Tiffany. He's the one most publicly sort of leading the charge. Is Bill Glauber, our friend over at the Journal Sentinel, reports, Rep. Tom Tiffany tests the waters, say that three times fast, on a run against U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin in 2024. Had a little fundraiser recently at the Spring Conservative Women's Conference at the Hampton Inn and Suites in West Dallas, Dom.
All right, down the road, man.
Tom Tiffany was out for a political test drive on Saturday morning in a hotel ballroom 250 miles from his home in Minocqua. The Republican congressman who represents a swath of northern Wisconsin in the 7th District was speaking to two dozen conservative activists. His topic was border policy, but the background was political as Tiffany entered that inevitable phase that comes when deciding whether to take on Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin next year. He's talking about even preparing for it online by buying domain names, but not yet committing to the race. I believe Tammy Baldwin can be beaten 24. Boy, is he off his rocker. I don't think she can. But anyways, Tiffany says yes. Not an easy task, but I do believe she can be defeated. The question is, does Tiffany believe he's the candidate best positioned to do it?
Don't they all believe it? That's why they run.
Yes. They always, when they talk to God, God always tells them they're the chosen one, right, Tom?
They sure do.
The Milwaukee area appearance showed two sides of Tiffany. Is that both sides of his face, Dom? During his presentation at the Spring Conservative Women's Conference, Tiffany said he believed that the border is the number one issue because at this point in time, we're no longer a sovereign nation. And we no longer have a southern border. Now, I've always taken a lot of issue with flatlanders from Illinois as well, but that's not very nice to say. I think it means a different border. He claimed, Toxic Tom claims, the border has simply been erased. It's gone, Dom. We're open borders.
All right, here we go. What about the wall that Trump built in Mexico? Pay for it. I mean, so many things can happen. Crudy, Glauber goes on to write, but through his talk and follow-up questions, he never once mentioned Baldwin. During an interview, though, he repeatedly called Baldwin a rubber stamp for the Biden administration, criticizing Democrats for policies on crime, energy, the border, and the nation's finances. The nation's finances? What are you going to do about that, Tiffany? You should raise the debt limit like they did when Trump was there. Here's what he says. I mean, the race ultimately ends up being a referendum on the incumbent, right? Tiffany said. I mean, it's always about the incumbent. And so that's why I go back and talk about her, because that's the contrast. Republicans still don't have a runner in the race to take on Baldwin in 2024 as she tries to win a third term. But there are a bunch of people thinking about it, including Madison businessman Eric Hovde, Franklin businessman Scott Mayer, and Milwaukee County Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. You know, it's pitchforks and torches time in America.
I'm hoping he runs. And I'm less convinced that Eric Hovde is a Madison-based businessman. But
oh, we'll get to that, too. U.S. Rep. Mike Gallagher of Green Bay also has been the focus of intense speculation, even as he waves it off and concentrates on his role as chairman of a select committee on China. Unlike most of the others, Tiffany is publicly considering the nuts and bolts of running against Baldwin. Another quote. You've got to figure out how you're going to be competitive, and that's part of what I'm going through right now. I've not had a sign-off for my family. I've got to talk to my wife and family and see if that's going to work for them. I mean, maybe have that conversation before you start jawboning, but, you know, who am I to say? Another consideration is the field that might assemble for the race, including whether it could be cleared for one candidate to take the challenge straight to Baldwin. That's what the Democrats did in 2012, the year Baldwin first won statewide election as he defeated former Governor Tommy Thompson, who had been weakened in a fierce GOP primary. Tiffany said it would be helpful if the field was cleared, but he's not counting on that. Yeah, of course
nobody's
it would be helpful.
Clearing the field for you, Tom. Nobody's clearing the field for you.
You got to earn that. I'm going to meet up with the other people that may be considering running, he said. I want to talk to them. I want to see what their plan is. I want to share with them how I see the race, and let's find the best candidate to run. I don't think there's anything wrong with primaries, but you have to have a plan for after the primary, how you're going to be able to fund your race from day one.
Use the Dan Kelly plan. Dark money from third-party groups, Tom.
Right. You'll get it all. You should have to tell Republican voters how you're going to be competitive from the day after the primary. Of course, Crudy, as Glauber writes, money is a consideration. The opening bid is $50 million on our side, Tiffany said. I believe Tammy Baldwin is going to raise $100 million.
Tom, Tiffany's going to need more souls to sell to raise $50 million, Dom. I'm just saying.
Tiffany has been supported in the past by GOP mega donors Rich and Elizabeth Uline, owners of Uline Inc. He said he has not talked to them specifically about this race yet.
Now, Dom, the Democrats labeled Tiffany as an anti-abortion extremist and an election denier.
A twofer.
Well, that's why he makes him a suitable candidate to the Republican base. But a little bit more here from the coverage at the Journal Sentinel. Democrats are already attempting to soften him up, tagging Tiffany as Toxic Tom. Well, I've been saying that for years. A reference to his views on climate change, mining in the Northwoods, and other positions Democrats deem extreme. They call him an anti-abortion extremist who co-sponsored a bill to prohibit abortion in cases where a fetal heartbeat is detectable. Now, understand, that means a six-week abortion ban. And they claim he's an election denier who objected to certifying President Joe Biden's 2020 victories in Arizona and Pennsylvania and said he would have voted to overturn Biden's win in Wisconsin had it been subject to a vote.
Oh, so close, Tom. So close.
Dominic, Tiffany doesn't back down from his conservative approach and played very well in the 7th, which over the last two decades has turned from a 50-50 purple district to a red district that helped former President Donald Trump win Wisconsin in 16. Tiffany said he believes the change started under Barack Obama. You think claiming the former president traded blue-collar America for coastal elites. The big tech companies. The character of the Democratic Party very much changed. People felt left behind. I think statistically you would actually look at the Scott Walker recall, which happened in 12. And I would say that was when the low propensity red voters in the 7th in northern Wisconsin came out of the woodwork. It was actually Scott Walker. Dom, Toxic Tom, he could be your guy. But there's at least one more weighing a bit. A guy from what? Los Angeles, Dom? Laguna Beach?
Is that what they're saying?
We got a Laguna Beach carpetbagger looking to run for the U.S. Senate from Wisconsin. Eric Hoadvey, a very wealthy man who's out in California right now cutting ads for the corporations he owns in Laguna Beach.
I'll jump in here, Crudy. Daniel Bice reporting at the Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin businessman Eric Hoadvey is looking more and more like a strong U.S. Senate candidate for California. Records show the Republican banker paid nearly $7 million in 2018 to buy a luxurious hillside estate in Laguna Beach, California, with an unimpeded view of the shimmering Pacific Ocean. Oh, Dan's got away with words, doesn't he? The California resident cost more than a residence cost more than three times what he paid for his Madison house on Lake Mendota, though it is nearly half the size. By purchasing his California home, Hoadvey put himself only 15 miles away from his Irving-based H Bank Corp and his primary subsidiary, SunWest Bank. He's a chairman and CEO of both entities. Last month, SunWest shot a commercial in Landers, California that featured Hoadvey as a hero in a battle with a big bad banker in the Old West setting. The commercial is part of a series of Old West-style ads featuring Hoadvey. As if that weren't enough, Hoadvey was named by the Orange County Business Journal as one of its 500 most influential people in Orange County in 2020. So how does Hoadvey explain all this California dreaming to the folks back home in Wisconsin, Crudy?
Well, here's the interesting part. The specific home he bought in 2018 hosted many famous shows like Laguna Beach, the real Orange County. And he is what? One of the 500 most influential Orange County citizens considering a run for the U.S. Senate from the great state of Wisconsin.
Well, we got a little more here. We'll let Hoadvey defend himself and his Wisconsin roots. We are the Devil's Advocates. Come back with us, 844-967-2789. John Nichols at the bottom of the hour.
It is pitchfork and torches time in America.
So run, Kirk. Run!
I used to run track.
of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open. You can join us at 844-967-2789.
You know, I think you got to count that one against us. We don't even know what time this show airs, apparently. Someone tell the announcer. We'll get it right eventually.
I think I'm working an extra hour a day, man. What's happening?
You barely work 2 hours a day, as near as I can tell. You better get on the phones if you want to join us before John Nichols does. 844-967-2789. Eric Hoadvey, California man looking to run for the U.S. Senate from the great state of Wisconsin, Dom. Feels like carpetbagging to me. Is there more?
Reporting Daniel Bice at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a little bit more on this. Let's hear what he had to say. Contacted last week, he guffawed with amusement when asked if he is spending the majority of his time in California or Wisconsin. That is laughable, said the 59-year-old multimillionaire. Okay, I'm born in Wisconsin, raised in Wisconsin, and graduated from the University of Wisconsin. My home is Wisconsin. I have a business in Wisconsin. So that's my response.
Isn't that sound a lot like the Tim Michaels 183 days a year response? Like, more than the legal definition of
citizenship. Where did the kids go to school? Didn't Tim Michaels' kids go to high school in, like, Connecticut or something like that? Hoadvey noted that he was, in fact, doing the interview in Wisconsin. He's the CEO of Hoadvey Properties, a Madison-based commercial and residential real estate company founded by his grandfather. Previously, he founded and ran Hoadvey Capital and Hoadvey Financial. I'm sitting in my office in Wisconsin right now. It's about 70 degrees, kind of hazy. I'm getting ready to walk down to my favorite restaurant called Red. State records say Hovde missed voting in the February primary election, but voted absentee in April. Asked if he was out of town for the February vote, he disputed the record, saying he'd cast a ballot in the Supreme Court contest. He did not say for whom he voted. As for shooting his Sun West ads in California, Hovde said it makes common sense. Guess what? I was shooting an old Western commercial for a bank that operates in the West. If you got to find Western talent and a stagecoach that looks like the Wells Fargo stagecoach, you're pretty well assured that's going to be someplace out West. Hovde said Baldwin and her team members must be pretty afraid of him if they're leaking negative information before he has even entered the race.
Dominic, he's just like us. Let me describe his property tax bill. He's got two of them. They add up to $125,000 a year in property taxes. He's paying $72,229 on the Laguna Beach mansion in California and a meager $45,082 on the lakefront abode here in Madison. $125,000 a year in property taxes.
Yeah, I mean, rich people pay a lot of property taxes if they're you know, assessed properly. So here's the thing, man. I get it, right? But he does have business elsewhere. I understand that. Is the concern is that when he doesn't spend enough time in Wisconsin? Now, I see with we make the comparison to the Tim Michaels and the campaign, right? I mean, it seemed he certainly spent a lot of time. Yeah. Do you think it's the same thing? I mean, if Hovde's kids went to school here in Wisconsin versus, is that more homegrown for you?
That would be a difference. But when one's California home in Laguna Beach is more than four times more expensive than the palatial lakefront mansion on Lake Mendota, at least from a cost comparison, I'm just saying maybe your heart and your finances are in California. Maybe.
Would you feel better if he was like in the villages in Florida, man? I mean, so what's your criteria? I mean, you know, for real, what's your criteria?
You can own a place up in Minocqua by Toxic Town.
But I mean, I know, but if you want to get away, if you got the money, you're certainly spending your, you know, your cold winters in northern Wisconsin as a vacation. That seems like more of a summertime getaway to me.
Okay, do you need an $8.5 to $10.5 million?
Oh, let me tell you what, I got a whole bucket of need, man, but that's got, what does need got to do with whether or not he's an actual Wisconsinite, right? That's your main bitch, right? Or is it that he's rich and spending all sorts of money on property taxes?
Let me tell you a quick story, Dom.
Okay, man.
About a guy I met Saturday night. I was at the Pfister, as you might know. I shared the story with you, but I'll share it with the audience. And I saw this guy, and he introduced himself to me I complimented his wife's dress, beautiful dress. And then he said, what about my outfit? So then I looked at him, and he's wearing this custom-made suit. And he's wearing what looked a lot like a congressional lapel pin. He's got a white beard, bald head, and he looked the spitting image of Derek Van Orden, the third congressional CD guy. And he says, Derek Van Orden, he was at my house last night. And then he pulls out his cell phone and he starts showing me pictures of him and Derek Van Orden. And this guy's like a doppelganger for Derek Van Orden. I'm like, are you sure that's not you in both pictures? So anyways, he starts telling me the story of some relationship through the DB. This guy is a big, apparently, to his own assessment, a big Republican donor from Coral Gables, Florida, and must have some relations here in Wisconsin. But anyways, so I started ferreting out whether or not this guy knew the sort of guy he was hosting at the house last night, Friday, right, apparently. And I said, well, you know, he said how brave and what a great guy this guy was. And I'm like, well, brave? Brave, I see him more as a coward in that he would not debate his political opponent. I said, I see that as a cowardly move. And I said, also, I heard you mention your affiliation through the Navy, through the Navy SEALs, and that's admirable service. I said, I was an Army guy, and they taught us in the Army not to put a live round in the chamber in your handgun when you're carrying it through TSA. I said, your brother Derek had the gun in his bag on the way back from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I said, he's been cited and convicted. Did you know that about him? And one more thing. I said, I made a pledge to uphold the U.S. Constitution. I said, I thought you Navy guys did the same. I said, your boy, that SOB. And I mean, I was letting this guy have it. Now, you know, the words are spitting out of my mouth. It's flying. There's profanity coming out. I said, that insurrection, SOB, tried to overturn the outcome of the election. And the guy said to me in response, and he was very red-faced. He was either going to cry or punch me at this point. We're done here.
We're done
and
here.
And where have we heard that before? That's the way I close down every one of Scott Walker's press conferences with one tough question after another until the man was ready to cry.
We're done here.
We aren't done. We're not even close to done. We got John Nichols. He's joining us next from the Cap Times, from the Nation. No fighting unless it's Saturday.
That guy couldn't carry his blank strap.
The Devil's Advocates, political commentary from the back of the class. It was a
beautiful day. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dom, we welcome back a fine guest and a friend of ours. He is John Nichols from the Nation, from the Cap Times. How you doing, John?
Hey, John.
I'm good, brother. Hey, both of you. Good to hear your voices.
Yeah, good you too,
to
man.
Heard, sir. Good to be heard. We're trying to duct tape all the engineering together. I'm just happy when our voices go out on the radio these days. But John, let me ask you. I don't know if you were tuning in early, but I was telling a little story. I met a doppelganger who looked just like Derek Van Orden, and the guy was wearing like a faux congressional lapel pin. So I had to ask the guy. And sure enough, this guy pulls out his phone. He had Derek Van Orden in his house the night before. And I'm not saying he's wearing Derek Van Orden's congressional lapel pin, but it was some sort of a faux commemorative thing he was wearing. And I sort of lit this guy up in Milwaukee Saturday night, and I was a little less than Wisconsin nice. I wanted him to know the sort of associations he was making, John, the kind of man he was giving his money to. And anyways, it ended a lot like a Scott Walker press conference. We're done here. And the guy left.
Oh no. You were trying to give him some friendly counsel. And
oh, it wasn't friendly, John. It was acrimonious counsel at that point. But anyways, John, let me ask you. We talk often on this big show, and we try to find middle ground with conservatives and Republicans, and if they're reasonable, we try to do so. And I know seemingly Van Orden is trying to govern as some sort of reasonable guy, but he's anything but, to my opinion, John. How do you deal with insurrectionist Republicans who happen to be U.S. congressmen? How would you have dealt with Derek Van Orden if you bumped into him at the Pfister with, you know, a snoot full, John?
Well, with all due respect, I'd ask him questions, you know? I mean, that's what I do, but and he's a member of Congress, so I'd be interested in what he has to say and what he's thinking. I fully admit I don't know him that well. He didn't really come up the Wisconsin route that a lot of other political figures do. He obviously had a military career and did other stuff. So I don't want to, you know, pop your balloon or anything, but I'd probably ask him, you know, a lot of questions and be very interested in where he's coming from as a member of Congress. I might also suggest to him that I was quite fascinated by how badly he did in his race last year. Because, of course, he did get elected to Congress, and a win is a win. But he had pretty much every advantage in that race in 2022. Immense amounts of money, all sorts of big endorsements, including that of Donald Trump. The fact that he had run the previous race and done pretty well, and the incumbent had stood down. And, you know, he almost lost it. And so I guess what I'd be most interested in, and I suppose he might not want to have that conversation, is why he thought, you know, after spending 3 years running for Congress, he, you know, barely got above 50% of the vote.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing, this Van Orden. He used money from his first campaign account, my understanding, when he was defeated by Ron Kind, to go out and protest the outcome of the election in 2020. January 6, 2021, specifically the day of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And while there is no credible reporting that he has committed crimes that I've seen, other than, you know, carrying a gun on a handgun on an airplane, John, I would say it feels a little ironic. There's photographs from his Facebook page this weekend, him and Kevin McCarthy were at a Back the Blue event for the U.S. Capitol Police. And when you're part of the insurrection and you're also there back in the blue, John, it just feels a little hypocritical, let's say.
Well, remember, Kevin McCarthy was briefly a rather principal figure for the better part of an hour back, 2 years ago, and did seem to think it was a bad thing that people were messing with cops and messing with the Capitol and such. The fact of the matter is that I think this is a challenge for an awful lot of the Republicans. I don't know if we were on air, you guys and I, on January 6th. I did a lot of radio interviews that day. I was obviously in Madison, and so talking to lots of folks, from around the country. And I remember that was a very fascinating day because it was a moment where it seemed briefly like Republicans and Democrats might actually get together on a basic premise, and that is that we ought to have the peaceful transfer of power in the United States. And it obviously was something that didn't last with the Republicans because, at the end of that day when they got back into the Capitol, a lot of them still voted to try and upset the results of the election. And since then, that's become such a basic premise within the Republican Party. And it's a really troubling reality because, if you can't have the basic premise that we can have peaceful transfer of power in this country, right? Somebody wins and you hand over the power to the people that win, then the whole thing sort of falls apart, right? The whole experiment. And so you ask what you might say to these folks. I think one of the main things that you want to ask them is, as they prepare for the 2024 election, a couple of basic premises. Number one, just a basic question. Do you believe that Joe Biden was elected president in 2020? If you don't, right off the bat, they're at odds with the courts, with, political observers, Republicans and Democrats have said about what was a free and fair election. That's troubling. Number two, if you're a Wisconsinite, do you believe that it was inappropriate for Ron Johnson and other people, fake electors and such, to try and take away the votes of millions of Wisconsinites by substituting a group of fake electors? I.e. people that were trying to cast Wisconsin's vote in a direction that was not the direction that Wisconsin wanted to cast. And number three, if by chance their answers to both those questions are inappropriate or troublesome, then why should we trust them with a position of power in 2024? Because of the fear that since Donald Trump is almost certainly going to be the Republican nominee again, that they might repeat those behaviors. And I, at the risk of being a little too serious about these issues, that's a big deal because this country survived an incredibly challenging, incredibly difficult moment, a moment that I think most of us never thought we'd see in this country. I'm not sure that we could handle having it repeated in January of 2025.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That's our pal. He's John Nichols from The Nation Magazine, Cap Times here locally. John, always great to talk to you. I want to get your sense. I think when Kurti's talking and having these conversations, and this is coming up more and more, how do we deal with the insurrectionist types and specifically the chaos agent that is Donald Trump and his acolytes, John? The CNN, I think that showed to me that we cannot treat him as the media, we cannot treat a guy like Donald Trump and perhaps many of those other insurrectionist Republicans anything other than the chaos agents that they are. So I guess my question to you, John, how did you think Caitlin Collins did the CNN structure for the Trump quote-unquote town hall? And, if you were in that seat, if you were the moderator, how would you have done it differently?
Well, first and foremost, it was a scorching disaster, right? It was awful. And it was awful for a couple of reasons that had nothing to do with Collins. I mean, she was sort of put in a terrible place, right? Sat down opposite Donald Trump with the job of taking him through a lot of very serious and important questions, which he has not answered, right? And trying to at once ask questions and then at the same time back check when he lied. That's a really tough job. And then they put him in a circus, right? they put the both of them in a circus setting. They're surrounded by a town hall meeting with apparently overwhelmingly supporters of Trump, who, if the memos are right, were told that they can applaud and cheer, but they shouldn't boo or criticize. So yeah. You ended up in a situation where Trump was playing to the crowd, right? It didn't matter what Collins asked. It didn't matter, you know, where the conversation went or to the extent to which she fact-checked. You know, when Trump was going to go to his next applause line, he was going to pull out his next prop. It was going to be this, you know, kind of chaotic mess of a situation. And it proved to be so. And so I think there's a couple things we take away from that town hall meeting. Number one, if you've got a newsmaker, somebody like Donald Trump, who's, you know, like him or not, he is an important newsmaker who ought to be, you ought to have him on shows, you ought to question him, you ought to have that dialogue. You don't create a circus around him, right? And so the idea of doing it at the town hall meeting was absurd, right? I mean, if Donald Trump's willing to submit to an interview with CNN, you put him one-on-one with your best questioner, and maybe that is Caitlin Collins, that's fine. But whoever it is, that person ought to have a straight, you know, conversation with them, not with, you know, interruptions to try and get applause, and not with, you know, a situation where really the crowd kind of turned on Collins to such an extent that, you know, I think it was, you know, she was left with very few options to pursue an effective interview. So it was a mess in that regard. We ought to go more to the BBC style, where if you've got a controversial figure, you put that figure one-on-one with somebody who can ask them some tough questions. And if you want to see a example of how it's done, do you remember back, this was a couple of years ago, the Jonathan Snow interview, where he sat one-on-one, I think it was done with Axios, so I'm not exactly, I'd have to check to be sure if I'm right about that, but where he's as a one-on-one with Trump in a room and asked him a lot of really tough questions. And the tenor of the circumstance was such that Trump didn't really have an out. He didn't have an option of going for applause lines or turn to the crowd. And so Trump was forced to actually answer some of those questions, and he didn't do very well, but at least it was an honest interview. And that's going to be something that media needs to learn going into the 2024 campaign. Second thing I'll suggest to you that's probably just as important, what you really saw there was the outline and the framework for the 2024 Republican presidential debate. That's what those debates are going to be like. And if you watched what happened there, you got to ask yourself, as much as you may disregard or disrespect Ron DeSantis, you know, what is he thinking? If he thinks he's going to go into a debate with Donald Trump and somehow come out of that unscathed, he isn't. It's going to be just like that on steroids.
John, we have about 3 minutes left in this segment. I want to get your take. You mentioned, of course, January 6th being important and dangerous, something we never thought we'd see. And I would submit, yeah, I totally agree with that so far. My concern now going forward, we have an indicted, Republican presidential candidate. We have several other cases that could fall between now and then. Do you think we're the worst of it's behind us or ahead of us, John?
Oh, I don't think the worst of it's necessary. We have been since June of 2015, when Trump came down that elevator, we've been sort of in this surreal, you know, kind of testing moment for America. What can be done to our democracy? How much damage can it take? How many hits can it take before it falls apart, right? And can it survive? And that's the reality of it. And we're not done with it. The way that you finish a moment like that, whether you like it or not, is, and I know some folks may not want to hear this, it's not through a criminal process. It's not through a courtroom process. The way you resolve that ultimately is through an election in which people clearly choose one direction or another. In 2000, 7 million more people voted for Joe Biden than for Donald Trump. That was a pretty significant signal, but they didn't give Biden a sufficient congressional majority to actually govern with the sort of boldness that was necessary. And so we end up in a situation where we still have a really unresolved circumstance as a country. And I think we're going to see an awful mess in 2024. And the question, the only real question is, will the American people resolve that mess by voting strongly for democracy. And there's only, frankly, there's only going to be one choice who's on the side of democracy in 2024.
Well, I hope by that, John Nichols, you mean Joe Biden. And of course, the Devil's Advocates. John, stick around if you would. We will be right back. More of the greatest radio show ever, and that's not even arguable.
That's my character. I'm the trash man.
The big and tall of political talk. The Devil's Advocates.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Be sure to check us out on the socials. You can hit us up on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio, of course, on the civicmedia.us shows tab for webcasts and interviews.
Don, we've got the finest of guests. He is the returning champ, John Nichols, from the Nation, from the Cap Times locally. John, appreciate you sticking around, fella. Tammy Baldwin, we know she is running for re-election. We have yet to see any Republican publicly state they're in it to win it. And we hear it being bantered about the toxic Tom Tiffany from the 7th CD, formerly state senator, toxic Tom Tiffany. Well, he's considering it, John, but we talked about this January 6th action. Tom Tiffany voted to overturn the electoral outcome in Arizona and at least Pennsylvania, I believe, and said had there been a vote on Wisconsin, he would have been willing to overturn the will of Wisconsin voters as well, John. And this guy's serving in the Congress. I guess he didn't show up on January 6th with Van Orden using campaign cash. But, John, I still find it very troubling. Is that the best the Republicans have to offer? Because if that's the case, Tammy's unbeatable.
Well, first off, we're not sure Tiffany's going to have the guts to give up his House seat in order to run for a Senate seat. I mean, everybody wants to be a senator, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it. And so I think there's some question on that. If he does, what you just laid out is really important, because if you'll remember the Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin between Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly, I would argue one of the most devastating campaign ads on Dan Kelly was the Protasiewicz campaigns pointing out that he had been a lawyer for the Republican Party at a time where they're trying to gin up these fake electors and overturn the democratic will of the people of Wisconsin. I think that did Kelly a lot of damage. And frankly, if the Republicans want to nominate another candidate, or in this case, Kelly was a nonpartisan candidate, but with Republican backing, in this case, it would be a formal Republican candidate. If they want to put another candidate forward who is literally, the embodiment of this disregard for democracy, disregard for the will of the people of Wisconsin, so be it. But we've seen this show before. We've seen this play out, and it was a 55-45 victory for Janet Protasiewicz. I would suspect it would be just as strong, if not stronger, for Tammy Baldwin against the Tom Tiffany. So if Republicans are smart, and I'm very serious about this, I think they're going to look for another candidate. And it's likely that the candidate they'll look to is somebody like Eric Hovde, the Madison businessman, although Eric Hovde also has the challenge that Republicans have faced in the past. Remember that when Tim Michaels was a Republican nominee for governor of Wisconsin in 2022, one of his biggest problems was the fact that he seemed to live in Connecticut. Well, Eric Hovde apparently seems to have quite an estate out at Laguna Beach in California. And again, it's that same problem. The Republicans don't seem to be able to figure out that they've had winning strategies in Wisconsin, but those strategies have been built around people who are hardwired and deeply rooted in Wisconsin politics and Wisconsin traditions. They may be conservatives. They may be people that you or I might disagree with, but at least they check the basic boxes, somebody like a Tommy Thompson. And until they find somebody like a Tommy Thompson, I think you're going to have a very, very hard time taking on Tammy Baldwin. And of course, even then, I will remind you that Tammy Baldwin already beat Tommy Thompson once. And so it's looking pretty good for her.
John Nichols of the Nation of the Cap Times here in Madison. John, I think Wisconsin's kids are all right. I saw some voting. I believe it was the midterm voting. And I know the kids were showing up like 10 to 1 to vote for Protasiewicz in the spring election on UW campuses. John, like 50% of the young people voted in the most recent midterms. If this becomes a voting habit, the Republican Party is done in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, you know, right now, according to the data, and it's census data, it's a little bit, you know, I wouldn't say it's precise in every way, but the indication is that Wisconsin has the highest percentage of people under 25 voting in the country. Think about that, that we have a disproportional level of youth vote as compared to other states across the country, and that has developed since 2018. What has been the pattern since 2018? Democrats won pretty much every statewide race in 2018. They won the presidency in 2020. They also won a Supreme Court race that year. 2022 comes along. They win the governorship. They win attorney general. They don't win everything, but they do way better than expected. 2023 comes along. They win another Supreme Court seat, flip control of the chamber. I think what this is telling us is that as youth vote ticks up in Wisconsin, it creates a real problem for the Republican Party. It's one of the reasons why Scott Walker has been complaining about the youth vote, right? He's saying, well, we got to do something about this. Well, I mean, the thing to do about it would be to actually take stands on the issues and nominate candidates that the young people approve of, that they find appealing. The Republicans don't seem to be willing to do that, so they're going to try and make it harder to vote on campus and things like that. But the bottom line is this, and this is a really important thing. Young voters in Wisconsin especially seem to be determined to vote. They're determined to vote because they care about a set of issues, reproductive rights, worker rights, civil rights, civil liberties. And as long as that pattern holds, you're right. It is a big, big problem for the Republican Party.
John, do we envision a lawsuit? I mean, I've heard rumor forward law. I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah,
law forward had a lawsuit on the gerrymandering issue. I think a fresh map, John, with these young people voting across the state of Wisconsin. I'm not saying a Democratic legislative majority, but at least we got a fighting chance. John, when's that going to come down the pike? When do we see the lawsuits? I mean, I believe Protasiewicz takes her seat in August. Are we thinking like September?
Well, it doesn't happen. She doesn't take her place till August 1st, right? And I am, you know, I think there'll be a, you know, a dignified, you know, reasonable waiting period till say like August 2nd. Before that happens. But yes, I expect the lawsuit's going to come very, very quickly. These lines are radically gerrymandered. It is a bad map. It will not stand the test in a legitimately constituted court, i.e. a court that actually is in favor of small D democracy. And so, yeah, I think the case will be brought. I think it will get to the court quickly. I suspect the court will, you know, pull it up fast. And then the question is how the court will actually deal with it. And you sort of addressed that a little bit in your question, because I don't think that this court will draw maps that are heavily gerrymandered to the Democrats. I think it'll draw fair maps. Because fair maps means that Democrats are still going to have to fight to win control of the legislature or congressional seats, but they've got that fighting chance.
John Nichols, we always got a fighting chance with you on that wall with us. John, appreciate you coming around. I guess it's a big Monday edition.
Well, it's an honor to be with you. Thanks for talking about all these interesting issues with me.
Well, happy belated Mother's Day to the women in
my
your
mom
life.
Is 90, she's 92 and carrying on.
Oh, that's fantastic, John. Thanks again, man. Great talking to you.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates, a happier, happy hour rolling to it, the Monday edition. We ain't mailing it in, but you can call in 844-96-PARTY.